Hello and welcome to the Social Fabric podcast with me, Andrea Splendori, and this is a limited series called Curiosity Didn't Kill the Cat in collaboration with Dara Power. It is a journey of discovery through curiosity and creativity, talking to different people about how they express creativity and what it means to them. In this first episode, Dara and I discussed the reasons why we decided to start this podcast, but more so what creativity means to us. I hope you enjoy it and you will follow our journey and be part of it. Please subscribe, share and review. It would always help. The title tune is Happy and Shiny by The Roundabout Us.
Out of this, you know,
and totally.
If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But yeah, so what I was thinking, no, and it will work because I was wandering around, as you were just saying, you know, walking around. It's you know, it's that total process of taking the time out and just, you know, basically it's giving the brain a bit of a chance to reprogram itself, you know, to think of things, and I was just there. I was just. With the idea of this podcast we're gonna do, and perhaps something else that comes out of it, I was just wondering what is you know, where does curiosity come from, right? So that was it. And how do we enhance our own curiosity? Because we both agree that you and I are both curious, but I'd love to be more curious. And how do we become more curious? So I was just thinking, and you know. Who's your favorite comedian, stand-up comedian?
I really like Dylan Moran. I think he has a and back in the day, Bill Hicks was great.
Yeah.
You know, but oh. I kind of I like comedians who are like you know, they flirt with the territory of don't go there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but with heart, like.
Yeah.
You know. How about you?
Well, I mean, Billy Connolly is my hero. I could watch Billy Connolly all day, every day. And now of late, that new guy, Kevin Bridges. But I was just watching something with Seinfeld. You know, he does this great show called Comedians in Cars Having Coffee, you know, where he just picks up his mates and they go for a coffee in the chat. And he was saying something that got me thinking about the whole curiosity and how you can, you know, how we can make it more part of a daily thing, right? So like he was asking, he says, you know, that's what we do as comics. We just ask stupid questions about everyday life, right? So if you think about it, one of my favorite Billy Connolly's joke is when he tells his dad that the whatever car Ford have now come out with a prescription windscreen, you know, the front windscreen is all a prescription. So you can just get whatever prescription you have, glasses, you could just have. Yeah. So, and then you think, how did you come up with that? That's just something, you know, just questions about everyday life that just you're asking in a different, you know, they're just looking at a different angle all the time. They're constantly looking at something else because their story, Dylan Moran, the same, and Bill Hicks, like he really just spoke about life and he just twisted it slightly just by looking at it from a different angle. That's all he did, really. And it made us look like he was talking about smoking way before anybody was talking about the, you know, the power of you know, the big tobacco companies and stuff. But he was able to look at it from an angle that made it funny but made you think. And that's,
yeah,
you know, that's kind of got me thinking on
and you know, like Billy Connolly also said, like, you know, he wanted to become windswept and interesting, so he joined the territorial army, you know. And I think that this part of the curiosity thing is that, and the different way of looking is that you become more windswept and interesting, you know, you end up in the windswept territories. Like, he had this story about being kind of tramping around as a member of the territorial army on these mountains in Crete with a load of goats, you know, which kind of like on one level must have been total misery.
Yeah.
But then he explored the windswept territory, but he made it interesting in the humor and the kind of the perspective that he brought to it. So, and I think this kind of and it's interesting that you have a windscreen, a prescription windscreen, because in a way, we're all driving around our local town, and maybe the prescription windscreen is like, yeah, oh, God, I hate Mondays. We're prescribing the windscreen, or God, school traffic is just horrible. Or it's like a wow, there's a new kind of a display in that shop that I hadn't seen before. Or, where did that car come out of? Like, that looks like it's kind of a, that look, oh, that's a Swiss license plate. Like, what would somebody from Switzerland be doing in rural west of Ireland? It's like whatever our prescription windscreen is, we're either seeing the windswept and interesting, or we're, we're not seeing anything. Like,
Yeah, and that's interesting because another thing I'm finding out, that prescription windscreen, it's all our biases, all the things that we grew up with that we believe to be right, and one thing I was reading about creativity that was quite interesting is the ambiguity is really important, right? Because you have to be able to take the possibility that something that has just been said could be something else as well. Now, you might agree, disagree, it doesn't matter. But having that dual idea, it really helps you to kind of make things clear in your head and then go, okay, well, how am I going to make this something really interesting, something creative, as opposed to just keep going with, today's Monday morning and it's a horrible day and I'm going to get to wherever I need to get. And not enjoying any of it, And that goes back to what you were saying to me before about the, which I still have to read more about, but the utilization, of Milton Erickson, utilizing everything you have at your hand, in your hand. That's my interpretation when you mentioned it to me, just utilizing what you have and make the most out of it.
yeah, it's funny, like, because it's an inner world as well as an outer world, and it's where you're coming from. And like, one of the stories about Milton Erickson was that when he was a kid, there's a horse arrived in their kind of farm in rural Wisconsin with no rider on it, and he was about 10 and he just jumped on the horse's back. And about 15 miles later, he arrived in a farmer's yard, and the farmer goes, "How did you know where to bring the horse to?" And Milton Erickson said, "Well, the horse knew the way. I just kept his attention on the road." That and he used that as a kind of a parable or as a metaphor for everybody has this power to see whatever's happening and to use it. And it's the ambiguity is to trust the unknown, or to get into that kind of space where, I'm on the back of a horse. The road is going somewhere. I have no idea where the horse is going, but I have a certain element of trust that the journey will be an interesting one and worthwhile, and it'll end up somewhere anyway. But I've got the resourcefulness to deal with it, and I think that kind of the utilization comes with a kind of an embracing of the ambiguity. Is to kind of, I don't know why this is here, but now that it's here, let's play with it and see what happens,
Yeah, and I think that word play is really key, isn't it? Just playing with things because we just and I know it's a cliche, but taking life too seriously, but we do. And we just don't see sometimes that opportunity outside of the daily grind, as a lot of people call it. Which again, it's interesting when you start to analyze all the words we use for what is our life, basically, the daily grind, and all these things that we say, and it starts us off in the wrong foot, really, isn't it? Like you get up in the morning and going for your daily grind. Yeah, sure. I'll get on there. I'll do my thing, and there's so much more to, so so much more to that journey to work. There's so much more to everything within work that you can make something out of it, and just allowing that play to seep into it. Whatever that, whatever, because that's the other thing I was thinking about it because it people sometimes say, oh, but you're very creative. And I said, well, what does that mean? What does that mean? I'm not very, I'm trying things all the time. I don't know if I'm creative, but I keep trying all the time new things, and some are good, some are bad, some are indifferent, some are just. And as we said, as we said at the beginning of this conversation a few weeks ago, to me, it's very much the journey as opposed to the product, right? And we know that the satisfaction comes from the expectations of what you're going to produce. So you and I, like, you're a more accomplished drawer and painter than I am, but I mean, I love doing my bit, and I love doing it. And the doing is the part I really enjoy. Then I stand back and look at it and say, that was cool. But then I can't wait to get a, you know, get another piece of paper doing another one, because that journey, that moment of seeing things appear in front of you. And that's what drawing is a great expression of, it because it's manifests itself very quickly in front of your eyes, which is, it's quite magical. The first time something, actually, for me, it was amazing when I first managed to get whatever was in my head on a piece of paper, because up to that point it was such a struggle. There was something in my head, and by the time I looked at the piece of paper, I was like, no, that's not quite what I had in mind. But now at least I know that if I want to draw a face, it's going to be a face, not quite the way I would like it, but I know it's a face, or it's a dog, or it's a cat. But before it was that, but that whole journey of, in my head, I'm looking at this portrait that I'm going to do. Then it's going to be amazing. And by the time it's on paper, it doesn't look quite like what was in my head. But that whole process has been, it's been very revealing of what goes on inside.
Yeah, and it's, like a couple of things came to mind when you were talking. One is Shakespeare said the root of all heartaches is expectations, and like in my head I might be thinking I'm drawing like Picasso, but then I when it comes out on the page, I was trying to draw like Picasso in realist mode, but it comes out like Picasso in cubist mode. Like it's kind of, yeah, that the eyes are all in the wrong place and everything, and that. There's a discovery element, like one of the Milton Glaser, he designed the I Love New York t-shirts, the graphic designer. He was asked, like, what are you drawing? And he said, well, if I knew that, I wouldn't be drawing. that there's kind of a he, that it, the process of creating something is a discovery process. It's not an outcome. And the kind of the way I'd describe that is that, like, to draw decorates time, or to make music decorates time. And you may end up with something that lasts, that decorates space, that you hang up on the wall. But even if you don't, the time you spend doing it is not something you'll ever regret. You might kind of judge the outcome of the process, but during the process, when you're engaged in it, there's a suspension of judgment, and there's a kind of discovery of, oh wow, I didn't know what was going to happen there. And kids do this all the time, naturally. Like you look at a kid and, give them one color crayon and it does, like they'll make a masterpiece. Give them 20 colors, they'll use all 20 colors, and it could look like a mess at the end of it, but they'll just have totally enjoyed the discovery process. And they're not going like, oh, my picture is terrible in comparison to yours, or is it in comparison to Picasso's. And if they throw it in the bin, no problem. It might stay on the door of the fridge for a day or two and then gets thrown in the bin. And they're not bothered by it. They're not hung up on the kind of the product of it, but they're the most joyful, fun kind of running around the place, like free thinkers. And all humans are like that until we get kind of crushed by the daily grind into forgetting,
That's so true, actually. And studies have shown that the imagination between age, 3 to 5 is just phenomenal. And as you say, when you mentioned the crayons, and we all had those pictures on the fridge for a while, our first child's first drawing, and you look it back a few years later, go, yeah, it's a nice big red line, and he or she had drawn a house or a car or a very complicated landscape. And in their head, that's what it was, right? When they finished, it was like, look what I painted for you. And And then we do lose that. And it's interesting what you were saying there about the judgment, because that's one thing I found, and I was guilty of that myself. And we're talking about drawing now because it is kind of something that we share. But I always remember like literally hiding. You know, so if I was on the train, you know, covering it like I used to do when I was in school, you know, so that nobody could see what I was doing. And I was like, then after a while, I was like, hang on, what am I doing here? This is for me. This is what I'm doing. This is what I'm enjoying doing. And now I do it, and I love it. And it really, it's nice when somebody says, oh, that's a nice thing. Or it's nice when somebody, you know, pays a compliment. Or there's been many times on the plane where people just completely ignore you. And you go, oh, that's interesting, you know. I couldn't ignore somebody that's doing the drawing beside me, but some people do. And at the same time, I go, okay, that's all good, you know. Like, I'm doing it for myself, and it is grace, and leaving that judgment behind. It's part of this old concept of allowing our brain to create, right? Because at the moment, there's a fear of failure, there's a fear of judgment, and there's a fear of everything else, right? The moment we stop fearing all that, then the brain is powerful, can do all sorts of things, you know.
Yeah, and it's funny, you know, because like what came to mind, you know, the image of you sitting on a train or on a plane and drawing or whatever, and is social disapproval and comparison is such a kind of we all kind of get brainwashed into it, you know, and that like as if. You know, you don't compare your child's picture to another child's picture and go, their picture is terrible in comparison. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, but yet, like, by the time you're in fifth or sixth class, you're doing it. And then it's like, when you're in public, it's people are looking and they're kind of, some people are going, God, geez, I can't draw at all. I remember I tried it in school. And others, like, it kind of reminds them that it's okay to kind of, and sometimes I've had people go, geez, that's not very good, is it? I go, no, it's not. You know, but that's why you do it. Like, it's practice. But I think it's the same for any artistic endeavors now. It's like, you know, there's a tendency for, you know, Coldplay or Damien Hirst or David Hockney. Like, people can look at it and go, look at these amazing creators. And they don't see everything that's been left on the cutting room floor, you know. All the stuff that's been edited out. Anybody who's ever written anything, painted anything, drew anything, you know, composed anything, written a song, there's a whole load of stuff that kind of that was missed in the process of putting it together. And everybody who goes through that, like, what gets through the failure, I think, because there's going to be far more failure than success in it, is just the joy of being in that state of being. Where there's not that kind of, there's total immersion in the activity. Like Alan Watts, the Zen kind of philosopher, basically said, you know, the secret of life is to take work and turn it into play. And Milton Erickson, that was his, when he had kids planting potatoes, and he knew that this is a horrible job. Like, you know, I don't want to do this. Like, I'm a teenager. I should be out playing with my friends. So he was like, I'm going to give prizes for the most extravagant design. So like they were making spirals and triangles and pyramids and in how they planted the potatoes, which made it harder to reap. But he got all the work done and they enjoyed doing the work and they didn't think of it as work. And I think there is something in that process of discovery and that process of pattern interrupt that's essentially human, you know, that's a really good way of being, you know.
Yeah, and again, the other thing that I found of late in the last few years that I've been doing my own way and trying to find that space for creativity all the time, you know, even if it's creativity snacks, if you want to call them, you know, where you just take that 20 minutes, a half an hour, or but really to give the brain the break, because it doesn't matter what we do, you know, it doesn't matter what your job is at this stage, unless you're still working in the fields, which is fantastic, and you probably have a little bit less distractions. But most of us in this side of the world, we're just too bombarded daily by Every now and then I come up with something in the back of my mind. I go, oh, I must do something that. And before I know it, I'm 4 hours into a Zoom call that it's gone. It's all gone. So there is that element of leaving, giving the space to really kind of make that change, make that, finish that drawing or writing down that piece of paper, on that piece of paper, some ideas that you had in mind. Now, I do use technology quite a bit in terms of talking to my phone. If I can't write anything and if I'm sitting in a car, I might just talk into the phone, and there's some couple of great apps that turn it into text, so it's that's kind of been helpful. But I think for me, it's more important to really consciously take the time out to do something. And like things like we talked about before, I think about the library. I just absolutely love the library. And I go there. In fact, I'm probably going to go there now to finish my study, because there is a sense of respect for other people that are there. You're there for a reason. You don't turn on your phone. You just absorb yourself in your study or your book or your newspaper, whatever it is. And I just love the stuff I get done in the library in an hour. It would take me 3 or 4 hours in my own office. I have my own office. I don't have that many distractions, but I still find a way to distract myself with a couple of the co-workers or friends, just to find an excuse to go and have a cup of tea or whatever. So I think we're constantly looking for stimulation all the time, but learning to take more time out, it kind of slows things down, and then it allows us to come up with ideas.
And your 1 hour holiday idea is really good on that, because I think that it's one of the, the prescription windscreens, like it's not just your prescriptions that are in there. Yeah. It's the prescriptions from all your conditioning, from your parents, from school, from society, all the expectations that are there that, like, to allow yourself to have a creative time, even if the product of it is not, you don't know what it's going to be, or even if when you produce it, it's going to be terrible, that it's like, because we're so used to having a really clear destination, when we're driving the car. And then, for a prescription windscreen, you could have a prescription laptop. It's the same. You go into a Zoom call, there's a defined outcome usually. There's a kind of a defined agenda. There's next steps. There's, moving things along in the world and all the responsibilities that go with that. The managing that process well, managing the outcomes well and everything. And that muscle has been overtrained in society to the point where, like a lot of organizations now are kind of going, well, do we really need to hire more MBAs? We need people with creative thinking. Like, so philosophy, for example, which I studied, has become something that people are more interested in, because it's like it's everybody. It's easy to come to a defined outcome in a short period of time, but, like, what does life on Earth look like in a million years' time? And what would be, the delivery of milk? Will people still be drinking milk in a million years' time? And what does the delivery system and the production system for that look like? And if we were to reverse engineer from there, these types of thought experiments, like, it's kind of like a, it is needed for innovation, but there's a judgment of that, unless it's ring-fenced. You know what I mean? Let's have 1 hour a week now, and we'll do a brainstorming, But the free play, or the 1 hour a day kind of holiday, is like a, you can see, like, I mean, some tech companies have apportioned time for people to just work on your own project for 1 day a week, or X number of hours, or whatever it is. They try and foster this. And the people, us as individuals, are slow to give ourselves permission to do it, to just, okay, I'm just going to do my own experiment. I'm going to talk to a stranger. Like, you and me kind of, like, came across each other's stuff on LinkedIn, Oh, that looks really interesting. And he's a sort of a curious head. Let's have a chat. Like that type of thing, you never know where it's going to lead. It's the Milton Erickson's horse, it's going on the road and been prepared to take the road and see where it goes sometimes,
Absolutely, and the one thing I think one thing is not necessarily is missing, because we're not here to pontificate that the world is crap and we're the best two people left in the universe, but the one thing that I found that it really helps and helps me anyway, and it goes back to what I was saying about Seinfeld and Billy Connolly asking questions that are just at first sound like completely, unreal. Well, why would you bother asking a question like that? Why would you ask a stupid question like that? But then that question is what really opens up the conversation, what really opens up that creative thinking that is missing a lot of the times, because you arrive in a meeting. You know your place, you know what you need to do, you know the road, you know where everybody wants to go. So you're tailoring your questions based on the idea of, okay, if I ask the right question here, we might stay on this road. But the wildest, the weirdest questions are the ones that really get things going. And I think that's what we, and I know a lot of companies are starting to do that creative thinking idea, but the more of that, the more divergence there is in the thinking, the more interesting it's going to be, because we all know, like, the innovation, that's where it comes from, right? Creativity, that's where it comes from brand new stuff. So you don't get brand new anything if you keep following the path and you keep following the meetings minutes, the minutes of the meeting. Sometimes it's just a killer, because that's all you have to think about. Well, you might have had an idea on the way to work that, you walk down along the seafront or along the river, you had a fantastic idea, you want to put it out there, but sometimes it's stifled, but I think if we do more of it ourselves, like individually, that constant wanting to know more, is just I think it moves it helps other people around you. It's kind of contagious if you keep asking questions. I was out the other night. We were at a Christmas party, and there was a lady I didn't really know. She's in the office. I didn't really know. So, but I just wanted to know about her. I just wanted to know who she was. I didn't care what she did for work or whatever. And she was like, "No, I'm not here to divulge anything about myself." I said, "Okay, great." So we started from "What's your favorite color?" That's what took us along a beautiful journey, and the 2 hours later we were still chatting. It was great, and but just and she got then it became a really interesting conversation, because then we were both, there was a third person there. We were discussing things. We were just chatting. Not to say it wasn't even just a chat. There was more to it. There was interest. That's what it was. We managed to spark an interest in each other, and that. It wasn't the most profound conversation in the world. There was some interesting parts in it, but at the same time, we weren't talking about the weather either, We were just going a little bit deeper than that.
And it's a difference between I know and I don't know, which sounds really trite, right? But the daily grind, I know what Mondays are like. I know what traffic is like. I know what's going to be said in this meeting. I know what's in this, and everybody's bored of that, And it's comfortable. It's a comfort zone, but the I don't know or the question, a more interesting question, opens a world. Like and everybody can ask more interesting questions. To your point, it's not like we have it figured out and others don't. Is that everybody in the world can ask interesting questions. Like one day my son Stephen, when he was about 7 or 8, he turned around and he goes, "Dad, what was Gandalf from The Lord of the Rings like as a boy?" And I was like, "Wow, that is a whole movie trilogy." And he was ahead of his time because, like, the Rings of Power on Amazon Prime were happening now, But like, so like, the importance of having a question, I think, is, like, in design, to design something, to create something, you start with the question. You don't start with an answer. Like there's in Warren Berger wrote a really interesting book on Glimmer called Glimmer about designing. And there was this guy, an engineer, he was in a queue for ice cream, and the guy behind him in the queue was in a wheelchair. And because he was in a wheelchair, the counter, he wasn't seen by the person who was, serving people. So he was jumped over in the queue. And this engineer was like, "That's terrible. Somebody should do something about that." And then he kind of went, "What would that look like?" And then he was like, "Why shouldn't what? Who's to somebody? Well, I've noticed it. So now I have the choice to either just go, well, somebody should do something about that and do nothing, or I should do something about it." So he invented this wheelchair that can move people up to eye level of a standing person. He went through a whole series of experiments to produce it. And so out of that question, the just noticing something in the everyday life, and then the well, seeing as I've noticed, maybe I should do something with that. He created something that's going to help people, And during lockdown, how many people listened to music? Probably loads of people. How many people learned to bake bread? Loads of people. So somebody with a little small YouTube channel where, they bake fennel seed bread or whatever it is, all of a sudden has become a friend, somebody who's keeping somebody else company. So the act of creation, everybody has access to it, and it might start with a question. And then you never know when that might benefit somebody. And even if it doesn't benefit somebody else, the fact that you got to do it, you got to create it, you didn't have to, but you got to do it, is like, there's a quiet joy in that, like, in going through the process of it. And I think that that way of allowing yourself to just, yeah, let's ask a question and see, maybe it's a hanger for keys, car keys in my house. Maybe it's kind of like something that takes muck off football boots before people come in. It could be anything,
Yeah, no, and I like that, and that's I think that's the key to the creativity, because again, it's a word that when it's bandied around, you associate it. If I say you're a creative person, there's a certain look about a creative person. There's a certain thought around, what he or she does, and we pigeonhole everything into, the creative arts, music, painting, blah blah blah. But really, what we're talking about here, what we want to do with this series of not just conversation between you and I, but maybe bring some people in and dissect some of the books that we're talking about, is to really, again, it's the journey of what we think is helpful in creativity, which is you just said, if you invent a brush that cleans the boots. Coming in from, but and you're the only one using it. The process of creating that brush and making it to use, it's really, really, it's not just satisfactory. It really does enhance our brain. That's what I believe. The more I do things, and I'm nothing special. Like I'm just a regular Joe. But what it does to me, to the moment that I need that 20 minutes, half an hour, or an hour to do something slightly different from the daily routine. It just the enhancement to the rest of the day is just phenomenal. Like little things that I do part of my 1 hour holidays. I always say to people when I work with people in the coaching world, if you walk out of your house every day, you turn left, just one day turn right and go across the road and just go that way and just look back. It's quite amazing. Well, you see, and that's all I'm talking about. I'm simply going across the road in a different way and look back, because the perspective changes and your brain doesn't even recognize your house from that angle. It takes a while to go, oh, look at my house. I have to repaint the side of the house, whatever it may be. But you haven't seen it for so long. We do the same things over and over, and just those little changes, changing the side of the road, all the exercise and putting your trousers, put your leg in. If you used to put the right leg in, start to put your le left leg in. for a change, and, you know, brush your teeth with your left hand or whatever. All these little things, the small little things that daily give your brain that, okay, I'm ready for something new. Show me something else, you know. And eventually those moments of realization come to mind and go, okay, I could do a drawing, I can play a song, I can whatever, you know, create a podcast and whatever it may be, you know, because everybody can do it. That's my thing. There is no book for it. You just have to do it.
Yeah, totally. And completely agree. You know, it's funny. I think in either The Hobbit or The Lord of the Rings, Tolkien said something along the lines of, every time you leave your garden gate is an adventure. And that's true. You know, unless you have the prescription windscreen in, which is like, oh, today I, you know, look, I'm short on time. Like tomorrow I'll have time for an adventure. And we can live our whole life with, tomorrow I've time. But what you're pointing to there is kind of a, you know, if you took look at a lot of philosophical traditions or spiritual traditions, like, you know, it's waking up. And it's, you know, in Zen, they say, like, in the beginner's mind, there's many options, and in the expert's, there's few. So that the enemy of curiosity isn't, like, fear. It's the, I know it already. I've traveled this road so many times. I've walked outside this door so many times that I've just stopped looking. And I've put on my trousers so many times, I've just stopped looking, you know, which for some of us who might be not the most fashionable in the world, it becomes very evident that we just stop looking. So we become a curiosity in the eyes of others, like, look at the state of that guy. So, and I think this kind of sense of humor has to be there about the whole thing, because the habits are helpful because they mean we don't have to think about things, but they're unhelpful because we don't think about things. And it's just to have that little, you know, even ask a question of somebody who you know for ages. You know, ask somebody in your house, a member of your family, for their opinion on something that you've never heard their opinion on before. You know, what do you think of this? You know, and it's like people are, even the people you know really well are incredibly surprising and interesting, like your lady at the Christmas party. You know, what's your favorite color? You know, what's your favorite color? Why? What's your top three worst movies of all time?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it could be anything.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, like it's just ask a question. You know.
And you know, and it's fascinating when you say that you don't know. I always start pretty much every day, and I don't know, I'm sure it's written in some book, but I start every day with, I know nothing, you know, I really know nothing, because I don't. And one thing that kind of researching this talks we're going to do, one thing I realize is that the, as you said at the beginning of this, I am the eternal student. I just love learning. And so I'm doing another course, and I'm not obsessed by it. I just enjoy doing it, and I do it in my own time. But the one thing I realized the other day, that I will never know everything, right? So, you know, I should have known that before, but the realization of the fact that you're never going to know everything, which is great, because it's a real relief. So I can just do my bit. I can learn my bits, whatever I can, and the rest are just going to be as open as possible to learn from others. And I'm still never going to learn everything. None of us will ever know everything, which is a real, it's a freedom. It's a freedom to go, great, none of us know everything. None of us will ever know everything. So let's all learn a little bit on our own and learn from each other. And we might learn 1% of what there is to know. And the rest is just constantly out there.
And it gets you off the hook for failing as well, right?
Yeah.
Because like anytime you learn something new, you're going to fail, you know? And like George Pransky, who I rate very highly, is a psychologist. He described his career as, it's not trial and error, it's error and error, you know? And I think was it Churchill or somebody said, it's, you know, leadership is going from error to error with no loss of enthusiasm. And I think there's a kind of a willingness to, you know, you never cycled the bike the first time. You never pronounced words right the first time. You don't speak another language right the first time. Half the time you get lost if you go wandering. You're driving from one place to another. You're going to take wrong turns. But it doesn't mean you're a bad person. It doesn't mean you should kind of go, okay, I'm never going to leave my house. So like to kind of be enjoying the process of going through, been on the journey or on the road, been on the walk and going, you know what, I'm lost. Isn't this great? Like a chance to be fresh again, is I think that that's a hard one to come to terms with for most of us, and me too. That like we're so used to feeling the weight of responsibility, like drawing in public. You draw. I remember going, a friend of mine, John Soden, he's a brilliant artist. We went to draw Clonmac Noise, which is like Glendalough. It's on the banks of the Shannon, and we went there, and I drew some vaguely building shaped stuff, and he drew Clonmac Noise. Like his was recognizably the place, and mine was, if I told you, you might guess, but it wasn't really that close to it, and it's kind of like that was a really cool experience, and I wasn't judging that my picture was bad and his picture was better. I was just kind of going, wow, like he's really seeing this place in a way that's totally different from me. And he probably couldn't draw my picture and I couldn't draw his picture, and the only judgments come with like standards or objectivity or whatever. But we got to hang out together and it was an enjoyable experience. And I think that hanging out together, not worrying about failing, exploring creatively, is like a that's why people go to pubs and play music together and and go to art classes and bake bread. You ought to see my bread that just collapsed, like to just enjoy the whole failure process as part of the learning process. That's it's something that we kind of learn, or we unlearn the judgments that we have about it, maybe.
Yeah, and I think on that, and then we might close out of that. I mean, I think that even the way we met, like I always admired your sketches, and that's the word, I admire them. I don't compare them to mine. That's a really cool way to do things, and whether there's an aspiration to get better at what I do, absolutely. But it's not like, geez, I really need to be like Dara, or it doesn't matter. You can mention 100,000 better artists than you and I, or millions of them. I don't know, billions. There could be a 2 billion artists out there that are much better than, but it doesn't matter. That's the point, is to get. So when I'm sitting beside some amazing artists, looking at a church in Rome and Florence, and they, exactly what you just described, they producing this thing in a couple of minutes of the beautiful pencil sketch of, the Colosseum, and I have this pen sketch of something that at some point it might resemble the Colosseum, but I just enjoy it, and we're both there for a reason. And the moment, I think the judgment is a big thing. Just stop judging yourself, stop judging the other. Don't worry about what other things of your work, because it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The bread can be good one day, it could be rubbish the next. You won't be able to eat it. You have to redo it. But so be it. That's, I think that's the key to just free ourselves of all of that and just become more creative for the sake of a better, yeah, really to just have a better life. I find it's just so much nicer to get up in the morning and look forward to something. And if you're stuck in traffic, or if you're stuck on the train for 3 hours, if you have your pad or something that you can write on or sketch on, time passes a lot quicker. There's nothing you can do. The plane's delayed by 6 hours. What are you going to do? You might as well draw or write or think, I don't know, instead of just give out.
Or create a conversation with the person beside you.
Exactly.
Like it's creativity can be anything. It's like it's a state of mind more than it is an activity. So like with the prescription windscreen, it's just kind of going, you know what? Let's just get all the expectations out of the way and just look. And maybe instead of listening to the normal news that I listen to on the radio, Maybe I just switch it off and listen to the sounds of the birds or the traffic.
Yeah.
Like you were talking about one day you noticed the sound of the traffic outside your
Yeah.
house was like, wow, that's really different than I noticed before. And that's kind of like a moment of being awake, you know, out of the habit, out of the comfort zone, out of the kind of to go, oh, wow, you know, who thinks about the sound of traffic? You know, it's like, well, I certainly hadn't, you know, it's just something I take for granted. Oh, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I know all that. And
Yeah.
then the all of a sudden, oh, I don't know. What
Yeah.
kind of was that, like a 1970s car, like modified motor? What was that? Like,
Yeah.
you know, it's a, and that's kind of a, it's a moment of waking up, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So look, what we're gonna do, we're gonna go through the few ideas that we have, see if we can get a couple of guesses on this, and go through the different things that we discussed, like curiosity, Leonardo da Vinci. You know, there's all sorts of interesting ideas, and we might just keep going through that list and have a couple of guests and have a conversation around it and see where that takes us. Because that's the same idea
Yeah.
again. We don't know. We don't know what the end of this conversation is going to be, because there isn't an end. Because by definition, it's a creation in itself. So whatever's
Totally.
going to come up at the end, you know, and who knows? But I think it's definitely something that it gets me thinking even more. And that's what I said at the beginning of this. I like to be more curious than I am. I didn't think I could be, but I think I want to be, and that kind of stimulates my juices, you know. So I have a few things that I want to read, a few things I want to research, and a few people I want to talk to see what their view is on, you know, whether they're the artist per se, or maybe somebody's been baking bread for the last 2 years and can tell us all about that Zen and the art of making bread.
Yeah, that's it. It's like a and it's an exploration, which is, you know, it's just seeing which farmyards the horse goes into, you know, and then going from one to the other, like in a, and enjoying the journey, which is the whole thing, isn't it? Like
Absolutely.
enjoying the process rather than the outcomes.
Absolutely.
Just asking for more. I hope you enjoyed the first episode of Curiosity Didn't Kill the Cat, and I hope you join us again in a couple of weeks' time. Please subscribe, share, and review. It always helps. Thank you.
Waiting to shine, this friend of mine. Moonlight washed by a glass of red wine. I'm doing fine if you tell me why. Yeah, I'm doing okay. My new cover design. Happy and shining like a sunny day now. We left some dreams broken on the floor. Happy and shining like a sunny day now. We'll never give up, just looking for. Yeah. shining like the sunny days now. We left some dreams broken on the floor. Happy and shining like the sunny days now. We never gave up, just looking for. Shining like the sunny days now.
And shining like the sunny days.
Some dreams in peace are shattered on the floor.
Happy and shining like the sunny days.
Happy and shining like the sunny days now.
Happy and shining like the sunny days.
We never give up, just asking for more.
Happy and shining like the sunny days.
Sunny.